Hello, my name is Mark Gibson, and you're listening to the podcast version of the Chagask Signpost Series, a weekly webinar that promotes and examines sustainability in Irish farming.
Good morning, and you're very welcome to this morning's Signpost webinar. 4 years ago this week, we had our first webinar in the first week of April, part of what would then be a series of eight dealing with greenhouse gases. Today, we celebrate our 200th episode of the Signpost webinar, and I'd like to take the opportunity in particular to thank you, our audience, who are the ones who have allowed this to continue to happen. And we really appreciate the opportunity to get a series of sustainability messages out to you, our audience. I'd also like to take the opportunity to thank all of those who have contributed over the 2 years. It is quite a milestone in terms of our series. Getting on then to this morning, there's been a rapid growth in the organic sector over the last couple of years. This has been, I suppose, enabled by an expansion in the organic schemes, and also in the growth in the market for organic produce. But it's absolutely essential that as we grow the numbers and extent of the organic enterprises around the country, that market grows also, and that market is balanced. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by three people. Joe Kelleher is our organic specialist in Chagask. Emmett Doyle is the sector director with Borbia, responsible for organic marketing both nationally and internationally. And Dr. Bridget Little is in the Feedingstuffs division in the Department of Agriculture, Food and the Marine. And I suppose there are significant concerns around the availability and the level of production of feedstuffs for the organic sector. So, Joe, I might just hand over to you there just to introduce the people.
We've seen a big surge in farmer numbers. So we had 2,000 new farmers converted to organics at the beginning of 2023, and we had a further 1,000 at the beginning of this year. So that's 3,000 farmers that are in conversion. So when a farmer joins organic, they can sell their produce as organic for the first 2 years. So as a result of that, we're going to see a significant increase in the amount of organic produce that's going to be available for sale from Ireland from 2025 onwards. And the question we're often asked as specialists in Chagask is, will there be a market for this? So Emmett is going to focus on the market opportunities on both the domestic scene and the European scene, and hopefully we'll be able to answer that. But firstly, Dr. Bridget Little is going to look at the trade between farmers. And we've seen a lot of opportunities have opened up in this area in the past 2 years, where we've seen a significant increase in the trade of grain, in particular, between organic tillage farmers and organic livestock farmers. So that this does present significant opportunities, especially for those tillage farmers, where there is a significant premium to be got on that grain. But there are some rules, I suppose, that farmers need to be aware of around that trade, and that's where Bridget comes in. So I might hand over to Bridget.
So thank you very much, Joe. I suppose I'm Pat for that introduction. My name is Bridget Little. I'm an agricultural inspector in the Feedingstuffs division of DAFM, and along with my colleagues, I suppose we have responsibility for conducting official controls, so inspections, audits, and sampling of feed at feed business operator premises around the country, including manufacturers of compound feed for sale. So I suppose, to outline my presentation this morning, I'm going to just briefly go through the role of DAFM as regards animal feed controls, the relevant legislation that's in place in relation to the manufacture and retail of grain and compound feed. I'm going to look at selling feed produce and grain from farms, and then also look at the role of commercial feed business operators and how they differ from primary producers selling grain. Firstly, to point out that the Department of Agriculture, Food and Marine is the competent authority for animal feed. And within the department, the Feedingstuffs, Fertilizer, Grain and Poultry Division is responsible for the negotiation, transposition and enforcement of legislation in the area of animal feed. So along with my colleagues, it's about 18 between 18 and 20 staff in the division, made up of inspectors and technical staff. So we're responsible for attending meetings at EU level, standing committee meetings and working group meetings on a wide variety of issues, from GM to undesirable substances, to sampling of feed, to animal nutrition. And then I suppose negotiating that legislation and then implementing that legislation and enforcing it on the ground through official control activity, inspections and audits of feed business operators. I suppose feed business operators range from, you know, our importers of animal feed into the country, right to storage hauliers, retailers and manufacturers of compound feed, as well as the additives, pre-mixtures and mineral mixture manufacturers also. So just very briefly, I just wanted to maybe put up this slide just to show the level of the amount of legislation that that governs animal feed, you know, from pesticide residues, ABPs, animal byproducts and TSEs, legislation, undesirable substances, GM, pesticide residues. The legislation is wide ranging, but I would just like to point out maybe three pieces of legislation that are very highly relevant, I think, to this presentation this morning and to feed business operators and as well as primary producers. And the first is that regulation 178 of 2002 on food and feed law. So this regulation clearly states that feed cannot be placed on the market if it is unsafe, and that it cannot have any adverse effect on animal or human health. The second, I suppose, piece of legislation is regulation 183 of 2005. And critical to this regulation deals with feed hygiene. And critical to this regulation are two guiding principles. The first is that primary responsibility for feed rests with the feed business operator. So the onus of providing safe feed rests with the producer of that feed. And that is starting at the primary producer, that is starting at farm level, that, you know, every farmer has a responsibility that the feed that he is selling is safe. And the second principle of that regulation is to the need to ensure feed safety throughout the feed chain, starting with primary production of feed up to and including the feeding of food producing animals. And then lastly, the final piece of legislation I just want to highlight today is regulation 767 of 2009 on feed marketing. So that sets out the requirements for feed labelling and feed marketing that every commercial feed business operator needs to abide by. So just, I suppose, a couple of definitions that are used widely in legislation and that maybe you may not be familiar with on a day-to-day basis. So when we talk about a feed material, it's commonly known in the trade or that as a trait or a feed ingredient. So by definition, a feed material, it supplies the principal purpose of a feed material is to supply the basic nutritional needs to an animal. So we're talking about barley, peas, beans, soya, all your cereal grains, maize, you know, including your imported feed materials as well as homegrown feed materials. And then just to highlight, I suppose, that a compound feed is defined as a mixture of two or more feed materials. So when you mix two or more feed materials, you're actually producing a compound feed. These definitions are included in 767 of 2009, just for reference. Okay, so primary producers. So just to point out, all farmers are primary producers. They're automatically registered under our feeding stuffs legislation once they hold an active valid herd number issued by their RVO. This herd number registers the primary producer or farmer for the feed activities. So primary producer of feed, food or livestock as appropriate to the activities carried out on the farm. So, and I suppose just maybe this is common knowledge already, but just maybe to reiterate it, that obviously farmers can sell, there is no issue with farmers. Farmers can sell all or some, you know, surplus of their feed produce or crops grown on their farm. So grains, combi crops, silage, hay, etc. to other farmers or merchants. There's no requirement for a docket or feed label to accompany any of these consignments. And there's no requirement for the farmer to go and fill out, you know, they do not require any other registration to do this activity once they are registered as a primary producer they, you know, with their, and they have, and have their herd number, they do not require any other registration activity in order to do these activities. Just, however, just to point out that farmers are not permitted to sell mixtures of different feed materials. So farmers cannot mix different feed materials because they are now producing, if they do so, they're producing compound feed. In addition, farmers can only sell their own produce. So they cannot sell feed materials or compound feed for reselling to other farmers. Okay, so if farmers are mixing different feed materials or buying in feed materials for the purpose of reselling them back out again, they're gone beyond the scope of a primary producer and they need to register with DAFM as a commercial feed business operator. Just, I suppose, on that note, so who is permitted to manufacture compound feed for sale? So it's only any person or business with a commercial feed business operator's license issued by DAFM is permitted to manufacture compound feed for sale. And I suppose the main requirements for manufacturers of compound feed for sale, so I suppose this isn't an exhaustive list, but it just highlights the main requirements. Firstly, I suppose the mixer is capable of manufacturing a homogeneous mixture. So this is set out in Regulation 183 of 2005, which states that the commercial feed business operators need to be able to demonstrate to DAFM that their mixer is capable of producing a homogeneous mixture. In addition, that the system that they're using is capable of generating a batch record for each batch of feed manufactured. So this is an automatically generated batch record that shows the ingredients that are going into the system, the target weights, the actual weights that are fed into the mixer, and that batch record is available and kept for each batch of feed produced. The mixing system must be a fixed system that cannot be moved outside of the manufacturing area. The facilities must be structurally sound, pest-proof and hygienic. The system must operate to HACCP principles and procedures. In addition, that there's controls in place as regards sampling and quality control, traceability and labelling. Also to mention, I suppose, that any feed other than homegrown grains that are grown on the poultry farm, so any feed other than these intended for feeding to poultry must be subject to heat treatment to a minimum temperature of 75 degrees at the core for 1 minute as sufficient to inactivate Newcastle disease virus. So this is obviously a virus for that affects poultry. So this heat treatment requirement, it inactivates this virus, but in addition, I suppose it has an equally important role in controlling salmonella. So this will, that time temperature combination of 75 degrees at the core for 1 minute will also kill salmonella. So that is an equally, I suppose, important point that any feed that's fed to poultry, that's being placed on the market for feeding to poultry, needs to adhere to this requirement. So it's with other commercial feed business operator activities that also require licensing by DAFM would include the import of feeding stuff. So anybody that's importing feed for the purpose of placing it on the market needs to firstly register with DAFM as a commercial feed business operator. And then, I suppose, supply DAFM with at least 1 day's notice prior to each arrival, to the arrival of each consignment coming into the state. So that requirement is set out in SI 22 of 2020. If feed importers will complete an import notification form and submit it to our division in advance of the consignment coming in, as I said, the legislation states only 1 day's notice is required. We require details of the feed being brought in, the quantity, the port it's coming into, the holding store, etc., where it's coming from. Storage of a third, so people that are involved in storing other people's feeding stuffs also need to register as people as operator. Wholesaling of animal feed, retailing of animal feed, and haulage of animal feed. These are all licensed commercial feed business operator activities. Just, I suppose, on the storage of animal feed, and I think the first four bullet points here are relevant to both primary producers that are selling grain as well as commercial feed business operators. So firstly, it was that animal feed must be stored separately from chemicals and other products prohibited for animal feed. The storage areas and containers must be kept clean and dry. Appropriate pest control measures implemented I suppose not just for, you know, we focus on rodents, but also birds and insects also. That storage areas are cleaned regularly. So the commercial feed business operators must actually keep cleaning records. That's a requirement under Regulation 183 of 2005, as well as full traceability for the animal feed contained in each bin or bay. Whereas the primary producer obviously doesn't need to keep cleaning records or traceability. In addition, commercial feed business operators must have a sign above each bay clearly stating the name of the feed material or compound feed contained in that bay. So how to apply, I suppose, then, a look at our feed business operator form. It's available on gov.ie under the approval and registration of feed business operators. And I suppose further information, you know, can be found at our address there or our email address, feedinquiries@agriculture.gov.ie. Lovely. Thank you very much for your time. And I'm happy to take any questions later if you wish. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much, Bridget. I suppose it's important, particularly with a lot of trade potentially going to happen with, between organic producers of cereals and organic finishers of animals. It's important that the standards be met and that we have traceability and proper regulation on the supply. I leave questions till the end, and Emmett, if you're ready, we'll take your presentation on marketing.
Brilliant. Hi everyone, my name is Emmett Doyle. I'm the organic sector manager with Borbia, and just really want to give you a bit of a sense of the organic market from what we're seeing in Borbia, both kind of in the Irish market, give an overview of the European market, and highlight some of the activities that we're doing to help grow the success in export markets. So hopefully by the end of this presentation, you'll have a better idea of the growth opportunities in the Irish market and what shopper segment we see that will help convert sales in the coming years, give a better overview of the European market and highlight 7 markets that we see the highest growth return over the next 3 to 5 years, and have a better understanding of some of the activities we're doing in both Ireland and in export markets to help deliver that success. Probably worth just giving an overview of my own role. So I'm the organic sector manager with Borbia, and this is a relatively new role within Borbia. So I would have started this in January of last year. And the whole focus really is help support the organic sector, realize the growth opportunities, both in the Irish market, which is very much focused on the Irish shopper and getting more shoppers buying more Irish organic food and drink. And in export markets is very much looking at the trade customers and how can we get more trade sourcing organic food and drink from Ireland. What's key as well is just leveraging the different supports that Borbia have. So looking at our marketing capabilities, our insights team, our overseas offices, and then also our capability development and talent. And for the focus of this presentation, I'll be looking at those first 3 boxes around our marketing insights and overseas offices. But also it's probably worth that our organics team is growing as well within Borbia. So last June, Conor Hogan started in my team, who's our organic sector executive. And we'll have a new starter in May as well, looking at supporting delivering our organic beef and lamb program across Europe. And I'll highlight that in the coming slides. Just kind of to set the scene, and I think both Pat and Joe kind of mentioned this at the very beginning, but we're seeing a lot of growth around organics, and this is definitely driven from EU level. So through the European Green Deal, there's a target of 25% of agricultural land to be farmed organically across the EU member states by 2030. And that's influenced, you know, recent policies and strategies in Ireland, both, you know, Food Vision 2030, where there was a target of 7.5% of agricultural land to be farmed organically by 2030. And this figure was revisited, and a further stretch goal was included in the Climate Action Plan last year. So a new target of 10% of agricultural land to be farmed organically by 2030. And to kind of give a little bit of context, we were about less than 1.5% in 2020. We're currently at 5%, and that's for good reason. As Joe mentioned, we've had over 3,000 farmers join the organic farming scheme since January 2023. And what that kind of means is that, you know, we've got 5,000 farmers now as part of the organic farming scheme. You know, some of those wholly are certified organic, and some of them are going through the 2-year conversion period. Of these farmers, about 90% are coming from the livestock sector. And with that, and looking at, you know, the 2-year kind of lifetime, what we're seeing is that forecasting that organic beef production is set to increase to about 10 to 12,000 tonnes by 2030, and that's up from 4,000 tonnes currently. And our organic lamb production is set to increase to about 2,500 tonnes, up from kind of less than 500 tonnes currently. And of that, about 80% of this will be exported. So that's kind of just setting the scene in the context. Going to just focus on the Irish market now before I touch on the export markets. So last year, it was a new role. We wanted to get to grips about what's happening in the organic market and what the kind of trends are going forward. So we did a six-month consumer research project with over 2,500 Irish shoppers participating in the research across both quantitative and qualitative research. So, you know, we did ethnography where we followed 14 organic shoppers for a week to see how they interact with the category, be it out in store or at home. We did over 12 focus groups, and we also did a number of in-depth interviews with, you know, retailers and food service operators to see where they see the, you know, the focus and the growth for Irish organic food and drink going forward. I'm going to highlight some of the kind of the key takeaways from this research. The first one, which is very positive, is that, you know, in this research, over 8 in 10 consumers said that they've bought into organic category in some format over the past year, with nearly 1 in 2 claiming that they buy some organic food and drink on a weekly basis, and we're close to 70% on a monthly basis. Looking at kind of future consumption habits, 45% of all shoppers said that they're looking to grow the level of organic consumption over the next 12 months, with a further 50% looking to maintain their current level of consumption. So when this was done last year, in the backdrop of a cost of living crisis, still really kind of a positive intent for the organic shopper. Looking at kind of the key moments when shoppers are more inclined to be buying into organics, some of it's around kind of having a little bit more disposable income around payday. It's around when they're looking at diets or being health focused or recovering from sick or illness, but also a key milestone is new families where, you know, looking to have organic products, be it food and veg, baby food for their newborn. Likewise, there is times when shoppers are more inclined to stay out of organics, and that's around kind of indulgence, kind of convenience and takeaway moments as well. Looking at the key drivers to why shoppers are buying into the organic category, look, like any food category, taste is always going to be the number one reason people go into it to purchase or consume food. But after that, it's very much driven by health and sustainability elements. So I'm really linked back to the consumer themselves. So there's a perception around organic food being better for your health. It's less processed. And as supports the environment and animal welfare and wildlife as well. So again, these all kind of ladder up to a health or sustainability driver. We also looked to break down the Irish shopper into different segments around their mindset with organics. So working from left to right here, we had about 10 to 12% of shoppers considering themselves as rejecters. And then about 39% of those as dabblers. So they're buying into organics in some format, but it's not that important to them. What was really positive here is, you know, 1 in 2 shoppers in Ireland classify themselves as organic seekers. So that means that they're going out and looking for organic food and drink when shopping, but only 7% of them, those proactive seekers, are kind of buying organics regularly, with the 42% of the cost prohibitive seekers and the convenience seekers switching in and out of organics depending on availability, costs, and the importance of that shopper mission. When we kind of delved into this, these segments a little bit further, we found that, you know, there's real growth opportunities with this 42% of cost prohibitive seekers and convenience seekers, because they're positively associated with organics. But what we found is that, you know, their knowledge is surface level. And if we can, you know, through a clear communication strategy, can educate them around the quality of our Irish organic food and drink, they're more inclined to trial and retrial, and then they become a little bit more sticky shoppers. Again, this shopper group, where the ages are kind of around 25 to 45, young families, and skewed a little bit more to a female shopper. As I kind of mentioned, there's a couple of consumer needs to help get these shoppers to consume more Irish organic food and drink. That's around kind of showing the, giving a clear kind of endorsement or fact around the organic production, linking back that to the consumer benefit. And then this helps to kind of justify why shoppers are paying a premium for Irish organic food and drink. And, you know, what we did then was, using this research, decided to develop a marketing campaign that we launched last year. But for us, it's key is about, like, what's the behavioral change of this marketing campaign. So what we wanted was, you know, shoppers thinking that, you know, organic food and drink is good, but it's very expensive, to them understanding why they're paying more for Irish organic food and drink. And likewise, you know, these shoppers at the moment are buying, you know, mainly in conventional food, to then buying more Irish organic food more regularly as well. So that kind of came to our campaign, which was making meals a little more organic, certified organic food and drink from Ireland, a natural choice. So this is our hero campaign, where we had 14, 15 different organic products across, you know, produce, dairy, meat, tillage, and with the call to action to look out for the EU green organic green leaf, and then learn more on the Borbia website. This is an example that we did for organic produce. So the header here is good for the soil, good for the soul. So, you know, good for the soil is linking back to kind of the organic production, and then good for the soul is bringing it back to that kind of consumer benefit and how you feel after eating organics. And then the tagline is make your meals a little more organic. So showing how you can quite easily kind of bring Irish organic food and drink into your weekly shop. And again, in the bottom right corner there is looking at your call to action, where shoppers can learn more about what's behind organics on our Borbia website. So our campaign last year launched on the 31st of October and ran for seven weeks up to December 17th. On the right side here, a couple of the statics we had for the different categories. So the top left, you've got the organic dairy static around kind of natural grazing. Then we've got a beef and lamb example around kind of animal welfare. So consciously reared, carefully seared, and tenderly raised, tenderly braised. And then the bottom right one is oats. And this
when you choose organic fruit and veg, you're not only getting something that's good for your soul, but good for the soil too. So whether it's a sprinkle, a handful, a pinch, or a slice, make your meals a little more organic with certified organic food from Ireland.
Yeah, so that's an example of one of the videos that we had for organic produce. And again, we had different videos for all these subsectors, along with a hero video as well. Part of this campaign, we were out of home. So we had over 200 sites right across the country highlighting their different categories and having numerous touch points just to kind of start building that awareness of Irish organic food and drink to the shoppers. We had a number of social media posts on our own channels, but it was great to see, you know, the retailers get involved as well. And this is an example from Lidl, who used our carrots video last year as part of their own channels and kind of partnering with Borbia and the organic sector around this campaign. As I mentioned, we developed a new portal on our Borbia website for shoppers to learn more about Irish organic food and drink. We had an FAQ section, you know, through that research, we knew what questions consumers are asking around organics and what they want to learn more about. So really linking them back to here so they understand, you know, what exactly is included in organic production and why they're paying a premium. And we also linked it back to the creative. So, you know, there's only so much you can say in a video or an advert. So linking back to, you know, why organic produce is good for soil, or what do we mean by consciously reared from an animal welfare perspective, worked really strong. In relation to the 2023 campaign results, it was a really successful campaign from a marketing impact. You know, we had 7.4 million reach, 1.2 million completed video views, over 670,000 radio listens, and 200 billboards across the country. But more importantly is the consumer impact as well. So we did some campaign tracking throughout the campaign with over 1,200 Irish shoppers. And we found that 84% of shoppers who saw the campaign noted that Irish organic food and drink is worth paying more for. And that was plus 14% on those who hadn't seen the campaign. 63% of shoppers said following the campaign, they went out and looked for Irish organic food and drink in their shop. And again, this is 14% higher than those active seekers that we had in the research pre-campaign. And actually 4 out of 10 shoppers said they went out and bought more Irish organic food and drink after the campaign. So again, showing their increase in kind of purchase intent. Also looking at this, we looking at different attributes around Irish organic food and drink, and those who saw the campaign over-indexed on thinking that, you know, Irish organic food and drink is good, better for your health. It's, you know, it's good for the environment. There's no pesticides and chemicals. So really 9 out of 10 shoppers agreeing with these statements following seeing the campaign. So again, showing that the messaging and the communication strategy was landing through this campaign. What's great is that we'll be going live again on the 6th of May, running to the 2nd of June, which will include, again, radio, billboards, connected TV, so on the likes of the Sky Player and RTE Player, YouTube, online advertising and social media. The campaign itself will conclude at Bloom. So there's an organic corner in the food village in Bloom. So we'll have 12 or 13 organic line companies selling their products to over 100,000 consumers over the weekend at Bloom. And we also have industry asset backs, so sharing all these assets with our client companies, so Irish organic manufacturers and our industry partners, the likes of Chagas, so we can further amplify this campaign throughout May and June. So that's kind of everything focused on the Irish market. Now we're just going to just highlight a bit of focus on the export markets. From a board BA perspective, you know, the kind of the focus in export markets is identifying new opportunities, be it new markets, new channels, new customers, and then delivering lead generation activities. So delivering activities, you know, to convert these opportunities into new listings for our Irish organic client companies in the sector. And also then is partnering with our current customers to support their current Irish organic sourcing. It's probably worth noting as well that, you know, that Bord Bia, we've a large overseas office network, which is key for growing exports. So we've got, you know, offices right across Europe, continental Europe, the Middle East, Southeast Asia, the US and Africa. And so those offices in Europe are going to be really important to help drive those exports in the next 3 to 5 years, as we see this as the highest opportunity for the organic sector. As part of that, you know, as Joe mentioned at the very beginning, and particularly from an organic meat perspective, you know, there's 2 year conversion period. So we're going to see a lot of product coming on stream from 2025 and 2026 onwards. So with that in mind, we've kind of spent the last year and a half, a year and a bit, looking to see where the opportunities are, working with industry through both the organic strategy forum, but individually with stakeholders and client companies to see where they see future opportunities for our exports. In the autumn last year, we did a large secondary research project looking at kind of 10 markets that had been identified to see can we validate the opportunities in these markets. And I'll go through some of these highlights as well in the coming slides. And currently, we're doing a large pan-European research project, both trade and consumer in 7 markets, which has come through this whole process. So looking at some of the highlights from that secondary research project. The European market is a large market. It's worth over €53 billion and grew from about €7 billion back in early 2000s. When you break that down by the different markets, you know, Germany and France are very, you know, extremely large markets working on, you know, €15 billion, €12 billion respectively. But you've got other interesting markets like the UK, which, you know, worth €3.5 billion, the likes of, you know, Sweden and Denmark, kind of €5 billion combined, but even, you know, the Netherlands and Belgium worth over €1 billion. And what's really useful here is that, like, these are markets that, you know, Ireland Inc. has an established network and route to market and for exports as well. So high opportunity to further grow our organic exports in these markets. Kind of pulling out two of these examples, and you'll see this, you know, the sheer growth in the German and the French organic markets over the last kind of 10 years, you know, in the German context, going from about €7 billion up to €15 billion from 2014 up to 2021. And likewise, France going from about €4.5 billion, €12 billion in that same period. So, you know, there has been, you know, talk of stories around, you know, a slight decline in sales in Germany and France by a couple of percent in 2022, 2023. But, you know, you need to look at the big picture here and see the sheer growth we've seen in these markets. So a small bit of stabilization is still, it's none to worry about. And there's still a lot of opportunities for organic exports across many sectors in both of these markets. Looking at a per capita consumption, I think the global figure is about €17 per person is the average figure of organic purchases in a year. So Europe heavily over indexed in this. You've got, you know, really unique markets like Switzerland and Denmark who have, you know, over, you know, €350 to €400 worth of per capita expenditure. But these markets have high self-sufficiency and are kind of expensive markets anyway. What's interesting here, the likes of Austria and Sweden, over €250 per person and spend on organics. And likewise, looking at, you know, the sheer size of Germany and France as markets and their population, still, you know, tracking about €180 per person spent on organics on an annual basis. You know, it's one thing to have high per capita expenditure and also have, you know, a large organic market, but for us in Bord Bia to make the best opportunities, these markets need to be importing organics to meet the demand. And you'll see here the likes of France and Germany rely heavily on imports to meet their consumption. And likewise, you know, there's strong opportunities in UK, Austria and Sweden as well. Another point here is that looking at inflation, and we've seen recently that, you know, inflation is at the lowest level at the moment. I think a report came out this week across a lot of European markets, and this has a positive effect for organic sales, for the fact that when people have a little bit more disposable income, you know, we see trade up opportunities and more shoppers going into organic. So again, quite positive here that, you know, we're looking at a stabilization and a decline throughout 2024. Another useful piece here to see kind of the growth in organics is looking at kind of NPD, so new product development in the food and drink space, and these are across the 10 markets we looked at originally. But you see that, you know, in the early 2000s, about, you know, 2 to 3% of NPD for food and drink had an organic claim, and this increased up to around 20% of all NPD having an organic claim in the last 2 or 3 years. So again, this is following where the trends are and where consumers are going, and showing again the validity of the organic market across these European markets particularly. This is a little bit more recent, looking at the last 6 months of all new product development in food and drink across Germany, Netherlands and France. And as you see here is that, you know, organic being the number one claim on NPD in Germany, the second one in the Netherlands, and the third in France. So again, showing that, you know, there's a lot of appetite in these markets for organic food and drink. Looking at kind of where the sales are in these some of these markets, and you'll see that over 65% of organic sales come through mainstream retailers, so the major grocery retailers in Germany and the UK, and about 50% of sales in France. So and when you look at this from an organic meat perspective, it would even over-index higher, because these multiples have a larger share of organic meat sales. They're probably looking at 75%, 80% of these sales in these respective markets. And then this is an insight that we took from our brand health, our beef brand health check. So we're looking at different markets and how Irish beef is performing from a consumer perspective. And here in the UK in December 2022, saw that 9 out of 10 of kind of heavy organic beef buyers would buy Irish organic beef. So again, showing that there's opportunities to grow our exports and our sales of Irish organic beef in some of these closer markets to home. So that's kind of setting the scene in relation to the European market and the where it is at the moment. Looking at some of the activities that we're doing from a board review perspective, as I mentioned, 7 markets were highlighted as having kind of the highest potential for Irish organic exports over the next kind of 3 to 5 years. And these are the markets here called out. So UK, Germany, France, Belgium, the Netherlands, Austria, and Sweden. So from our perspective, it was a case about how do we ensure that we win in this space? So we've actually in January kicked off quite a large export research project across these 7 markets. So we started off by looking at a number of kind of expert interviews to get a sense of the European market in a little bit more detail by those in the market. And we did social listening, so over 500 million consumers, and see what's been said in themes around organics, around Irish organics. The second phase of this research, we've conducted 20 in-depth customer interviews with kind of retailer and food service customers around seeing the opportunity for Irish organic exports in the years to come, and where we can win, and what's our kind of position in the market. So a lot of these customers were kind of category directors, commercial directors, and worked in a number of different, you know, retailers and food service operators across these markets. Additionally as well, we've had 10,500 organic consumers participate in the research, and again, seeing their kind of appetite for the different sectors, you know, be it Irish organic beef or lamb or dairy, and what's the messaging and what's their drivers to be going into the category as well, and seeing how we can use this to help support our own decision-making across these markets. And we're currently in phase 4 at the moment, so we're in the research analysis and delivery phase where, and this is, you know, once we have this ready, we'll be able to look to kind of highlight some of the opportunities that we see, share this back to stakeholders and our client companies, and will help shape our kind of decision making over the next 3 to 5 years as well. Another piece just to mention is that last year we were awarded the an EU co-funded campaign. So we put an application to promote organic beef and lamb in 4 markets, being Germany, Sweden, Austria, and Belgium. Excuse me. So this will be a 3-year program targeted at trade buyers, and really promoting, you know, under the EU umbrella of organic beef and lamb, but really kind of dial in the uniqueness of our Irish organic system around kind of being grass-based and pasture-raised. So this program is worth 2.7 million over the 3 years, and it's co-funded between the EU and Borbia. What will help deliver is we'll be doing 16 in-market events for trade buyers and media. And we call these organic meat academies, where we bring over, you know, some of our organic experts, be it, you know, farmers, processors, chefs, and we kind of educate trade and media about the quality of our Irish organic beef and lamb and our systems. Likewise, we'll be doing 6 trade shows over the 3 years across Austria, the Nordics, and Nat Expo. And really importantly as well is that we'll be bringing between 80 and 100 organic and meat buyers and trade media into Ireland over the 3 years. So they'll come in and they'll be able to see the quality of our Irish organic farming systems firsthand. You'll walk the farms, be in the processors, and there'll be also opportunities to highlight other Irish organic sectors while they're in Ireland as well. So it's really going to help kind of brand the Irish organic sector as a whole across these 4 markets. And again, this budget will help us kind of ramp up our B2B marketing, new content, new websites. So really kind of promoting that, you know, Ireland is on a journey around organics and the quality of our Irish organics food and drink and help support future growth in our exports. Trade shows as well are extremely important, particularly as we look to get new customers for the Irish organic sector. So last year we did 2 trade shows. We did BioFac in Germany, which was on in February, and that's the largest global organic trade show in the world. And then we did Nat Expo, which is a more kind of a French and continental Europe trade show in Paris. So between those 2 trade shows, we had 17 client companies exhibiting, and it helped deliver over 80 quality leads. So like using our offices in these markets to link customers in with our client companies and, you know, potential worth of a multi-million new business over the next kind of 18 months to 2 years. We were in BioFac again in Germany this February, and again had brilliant engagement for the clients exhibiting and a lot of opportunities hopefully to come on stream over the next kind of 2 years. Also, as I kind of mentioned, kind of partnering with current customers who are sourcing Irish organic food and drinks is really important. So this is the 2 examples we did in the last year. So we had Vomer in the Netherlands, who's a Dutch retailer sourcing Irish organic beef. And also Ocado in the UK. So they're the largest online retailer in the UK. And what's great here is that, like, one, we have opportunities to kind of showcase that, you know, there's a consumer want around our Irish organic produce. For example, someone like Ocado have double-digit growth around Irish organic beef based on, you know, working with their supplier, but also with Borbia and these promotions. And there's opportunities to bring in other categories now with these Borbia retailers, and we're exploring this to extend ranges into other Irish organic sectors, such as lamb. So with that, just got a couple of kind of key takeaways before we go to the Q&A section. From an Irish market perspective, look, we're in a really positive place. The Irish market is in its infancy compared to our mature continental Europe, but we still have 1 in 2 shoppers going out looking for organic food and drink, with the key drivers being kind of health and sustainability. The 2023 marketing campaign performed really well. It helped build awareness around the quality of our Irish organic food and drink, helped increase purchase intent and the perception around the sector. And that campaign will be going live again on the 6th of May. So hopefully you'll see billboards, hear radio ads, and see the TV ads if you're watching the RT player, the Sky player. From a European context, export context even, you know, the European market, you know, it's quite a large market, worth over 53 billion euro, 20 years of growth. You know, the European shopper over-indexes on purchasing organics. So a great place to begin with from our exports perspective. Looking at an organic meat and dairy area, like pasture raised or grass-based production around organics is a clear differentiator. And for us in the exports over the next 3 to 5 years, we'll be looking at kind of continental Europe and the UK. So those 7 markets of Germany, Austria, Sweden, Belgium, the Netherlands, and the UK is going to be a key focus for us to grow our exports. So with that, so thank you very much for listening, and happy to take some questions.
Okay, thank you very much for that. If you just stop sharing there. Just to remind you that if you have questions for MS or Bridget, if you use the Q&A, a good few questions coming in there. I suppose one question that's coming in, and it asks a question for MS. Marketing organic produce suggests that conventionally produced food are not healthy, more damaging for soil and lower animal welfare standards. While public opinion may follow this narrative, is there evidence to support this? And I suppose an ancillary thing is, where does this sit with marketing of the vast bulk of non-organic with Borbia? You have a responsibility and a balancing act to promote, I suppose, the positive qualities of both.
Well, actually, absolutely, and they're not in competition at all. Looking at organics, it's only ever going to be, you know, max 10% of output. Where we see the opportunity is that a lot of these retailers and consumers are looking for something that's certified organic. So our conventional can meet that. So it's a different tier from talking to massive retailers across Europe, they see the quality of our conventional beef and lamb and dairy and the reputation that has as a gateway for why they'll extend their ranges into organics. So again, it's never going to be competing against each other. We have an unbelievable reputation for our grass-based system. And that's why I called out that from the organic beef and lamb that our differentiator in the EU campaign is around pasture-raised and grass-based. So they're not in competition at all. And we will never undermine conventional for organics. It's a bolt-on to our offer at the moment.
Okay. And Joe, I'll come to you then after this. Just there's a number of questions around combi crops and the sale of those between farmers. And I think you indicated at the beginning that there isn't a problem there. There is a mix of plants in it, but sold as a combi crop, that doesn't cause a problem in interfarm sales. Yeah, our Bridget?
Well, I suppose just to set the scene, these combination crops would be the most popular crop that are grown on organic farms and traded between farmers. So they're typically a legume and a grain crop that are grown side by side in the same field. And that is the question that seems to be asked a couple of times there, is because they're mixed. And I think if I wrote down the comment, Bridget, that you made in your presentation to us, farmers cannot sell mixtures of different feed materials. And I think that's maybe what's generating the questions. Mm-hmm. So I might hand over to you.
Absolutely. Can you hear me? Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yes,
yeah, Joe. And maybe I should have been clear that no, there's no issue with combi crops being sold. When I was talking about mixing of feed materials, I'm talking about mixing of them post harvest. So the combi crops are obviously going into the ground and are grown together as a combination. There's no intentional mixing of them. So there's no issue with them. I'm talking about mixing post harvest. Yeah. That's the issue. Okay.
And just finally, before I hand over to yourself for questions, Joe, there's a question there. Can our organic farmers as primary producers sell his hay or silage directly to any farmer, even non-organic ones? I don't think there's any problem there. And in fact, I think one of the issues around organic was that a lot of the produce was going out of the organic chain, particularly on the beef side. And the objective would be to keep it fully within the organic chain.
Yeah, well, I might just answer, there is a premium there on forage at the moment to be had, especially in the current circumstances with the weather we're having. So it would be foolish not to be getting that premium and to sell it to a fellow organic farmer. As regards, can you sell? I might pass over to Bridget on that. There's no issue with selling forage between farmers.
No issue with selling forage between farmers, so no.
Okay. Another one there, Bridget, for you. If a tillage farmer has two straight crops for sale and a beef farmer wants to buy 2 tonne of each, can the beef farmer collect the two straights in the same trailer and mix them at home?
Absolutely. There's no issue. If a farmer can mix at home, for his own cattle at home, that's no problem at all. The tillage farmer can load up the straights into the same trailer and they can go out the gate in the one trailer. There's no issue there. Once there's no actual mixing, been done prior to them going into the trailer.
Perfect. Emmett, there's a few questions inside in this one. Thank you for this webinar, very interesting and informative. Just wondering, as a primary producer of organic combi crop, well, I think this maybe is for Bridget again, what's the best route to market, farmer-to-farmer connections? And is there contacts with distributors to grow Irish organic feed crops? I'm assuming farmer gets best value if they can sell direct, but the workload risk and storage can be an issue. Just thoughts from the panel, please. Bridget, do you want to comment on it first?
From a legal, from feeding stuff perspective, we have no issue where he sells it to, I don't know my any help on this one.
Yeah, as regards the farmer-to-farmer connections that we are seeing, I suppose, in our specialist team and advisor, organic advisor team, there is a lot of connections being made and we are putting farmers in contact with each other. But we should mention that the Department of Agriculture recently launched the Organic Trading Hub, which is there specifically to link farmers and with livestock and feed specifically are the two main products that we would see that being used for us. So I think that is the avenue we would really be trying to promote for that trade to grow between Irish producers.
Joe, go on ahead. Yeah, there's a question there. I have heard that 70% of organically produced lamb sells as conventional. How can we secure a real market premium for farmers so that they don't rely on just subsidy payments, so that there's real market opportunity there?
Yeah, no, this is something that's been talked to at an industry and through the Organic Strategy Forum about how can we address leakage. So I think back in early 2020, it was about 84% of organic lambs were being leaked into conventional, down to about 70%. And we're looking to see how, as an industry, we can reduce this further. A lot of this has been lost at store level, so being sold in kind of conventional marts. It's also kind of a lot of West Coast farmers, and then not having a valve to kind of finish those lambs on the East Coast. So there's a big work between the Chagas, ourselves, the department, IFA, to see how we can address it. It's not a case particularly at the market end of it. It's actually a coordination and a supply chain issue to bring it through. We've got customers who, you know, a lot of positive conversations, particularly in Europe around organic lamb. The issue is that they do need, you know, 52 weeks supply. Seasonality is a bit of an issue. So how we can extend the season, how we can get consistent supply coming through, is areas that we're working as an industry. I don't know, Joe, I know you've been doing work on this as well.
Yeah, I'd agree. There is a body of work to be done to, with the connectivity of getting that lamb to flow across the country from the hill sheep farmers in particular to finishing farms and on to the processors. So yeah, it is a body of work in progress. There's two questions here, Emmett, on specific kind of sectors. First one is on dairy. Does Borbia have a plan to specifically market organic dairy, given the milk price currently being paid to organic dairy farmers? Well, the milk price currently being paid to organic dairy farmers is going up as high as 69 cents. So there is a premium there. And I'll ask you the second one as well. Does Borbia have any intention to develop export markets for organic horticulture produce? So dairy and horticulture.
Yeah, perfect. So I'll do the horticulture first. The horticulture focus is going to be the Irish market. At the moment, organic produce is about, we import about 80% of organic produce. So we see real opportunity over the next 3 to 5 years around growing Irish organic horticulture, particularly in retail. So in the last kind of 6 months, we've had meetings with two or three different retailers in Ireland around how can we start developing a plan about identifying gaps they have around horticulture and produce, and where Irish growers can fit into it. So we're like, it's not going to be a short-term win, but over the next kind of 2 to 3 years, it's a focus from horticulture. So that's, it won't be an export play, it'll be an Irish market play. In relation to organic dairy, yeah, exactly. The issue at the moment for organic dairy is it's quite a small sector. I think about 23 million litres organic dairy versus about 9 billion litres on conventionals. We do a lot of work within subsectors there. So through the Irish market campaign, you know, dairy was center stage there, both from liquid milk, farmer's cheese and yogurt. So it's growing that awareness and getting more consumers buying into Irish organic dairy in the Irish market. Then from an export play, you know, over 90% of organic farmer's cheese is exported. So we're working with, you know, with that sector to help grow that further as well. I think there's a focus from industry to try to get more organic dairy farmers into the organic farming scheme. I know, Joe, there's an upcoming farm walk for dairy as well that's going to focus at that, because, you know, there's opportunity there. And like one last piece before I hand it back over to you, Joe, is that as part of that export research, we've done a lot that I just mentioned in my presentation. We tested with those consumers around an appetite for organic butter, organic whey, things that we're not doing at the moment, again, to show there's opportunities there and feed that back into industry.
Joe, just to interrupt, there's a couple of queries in there about watching the webinar again and access to the slides. By early next week, we'll have the webinar posted on the Chagas website. If you just Google Signpost webinar, you will get access to all 200 previous webinars and the slides for them. So they'll all be there, and that should be there by early next week. So just answer the two questions that are there in relation to that.
Perfect. Two more there, Emmett, for you. And just, you mentioned the farm walk that's on May the 1st in County Leash, an organic dairy farm on the farm of Bill George, if anyone wants to attend it. But the question here is, will there be enough availability of Irish organic produce for the Irish market after the planned export to the target EU countries?
Yeah, absolutely. So in the Irish market, there's a lot of scope to grow the organic kind of share there. So that's the focus in the short and medium term. unfortunately, the size of the Irish market, there will be a cap. So that's why it's important to look at, you know, start building our exports. So to give you a kind of context, I think the Irish market for retail sales of all organic food and drink is about 170 million annually. And we saw some of the size of those export markets. So there will be a ceiling there. So that's why we, you know, we need to focus on both growth, the Irish share in the Irish market, but then also start building the journey for exports.
And just maybe in relation to that, I suppose if we have this big increase in beef and lamb in particular coming that you outlined in your presentation, does that allow us to target kind of new higher volume markets?
No, absolutely. So like to date, there's been retailers that, you know, our capacity and our volume and our scale, we weren't able to target with because, again, as I mentioned, these retailers look for 52 weeks supply. So, you know, having from a beef context that we produce 4,000 tons of organic beef, about 2,000 tons of that's for the Irish market. That's only 2,000 tons left to play with and it's carcass balance. So it's been hard to work with these larger retailers. As more product comes on stream, more output comes on stream, there'll be, you know, the other retailers that we can see pushing volume. I mentioned it in the presentation that, you know, 65% of organic sales come through mainstream retail in the likes of Germany and the UK. That goes up to 80% plus in the Netherlands and very much on meat as well. So from a volume play, we'll be focusing on those retailers as well as working with your dedicated organic retailers like the Bio Co-op of France or an Tegut in Germany.
Another one there is, are there any developments for public procurement of organic food here in Ireland?
Yeah, no, there is indeed. There's a new target of 10% of sales, I think, in relation to green procurement to be organic. So I know that's a big kind of target as part of the organic strategy form and the new national strategy for organics as well. It's something close at home. Last year in our own Board B office, we actually did a fully organic menu for a week to coincide with launching that campaign in May and worked really, really well. So again, just the key there is making sure around availability and working with kind of distributors, contract caterers to get more Irish organic food and drink available so that we can further grow the kind of the public procurement, the green procurement.
There's a comment in here. Are retailers any more positive to more longer term contracts for organic produce compared to conventional beef and lamb?
Yes, I haven't. Nothing that explicit has been said to me. Where we are with the retailers in the Irish market is, you know, they see the opportunity of organics. They see there's a big kind of appetite for shoppers and to convert those shoppers to organics. So we're going to be working with them and see what gaps they have and where we get more share of organic in on shelves of Irish organic. So that's where we haven't really talked about contract lengths or anything with them.
I suppose there's a question about the long-term market there as to with the potential growth, how viable is it to maintain a decent price differential if you get to a very high proportion of the market?
Yeah, there's always going to be a price premium in organics versus non-organic. And then from a farmer perspective, you know, you'll always hear the department saying about, you know, there's lower import costs, you've got higher direct payments, and then you've got a premium. So it's a whole package together. Like Boer Beer, like we can't impact about what the price premium is, but what we can do is, and what I highlight in the marketing campaign, is educate shoppers to why they're paying a premium and educate them what's actually involved in organics so that when they're at shelf edge, that they understand why they're paying X amount more for organic versus conventional, and they're happy to do it because it brings it back to their kind of own consumer benefit.
Okay. Believe it or not, the hour has just passed and we're going to have to call a halt there. Listen, there's a good few more questions that we would like to get to, but we just haven't an opportunity. We will have another session on organics with Jack Nolan from the Department of Agriculture. That's in mid-May, so we'll keep you posted in relation to that. I'd just like to take the opportunity then to thank Bridget, Emmett and Joe for their contributions this morning. I think it's been really useful and it helps to build the understanding of organics. And I mean, we're in a key space now over the next couple of years with a huge increase in production coming down the line, that it is marketed effectively and that farmers and producers can benefit in terms of increase or higher prices for that produce on an ongoing basis. So thanks very much for your contribution and for your work. Next week, we're going to be joined by Professor Owen Fenton from Johnstown Castle here. And Owen is looking at the pitfalls of measuring carbon stock from grassland soils, a hugely important element of our climate targets is looking at how we capture and measure and get credit for what's captured in our soils. So Owen will be dealing with that next week. Again, thanks to Yvonne behind the scenes, and I look forward to seeing you next week. Thanks again to all.
You've been listening to the podcast version of the Chagask Signpost series, the weekly webinar that promotes and examines sustainability in Irish farming. Don't forget to join us live every Friday morning for our latest webinar. For more, visit chagask.ie. And you can also rate, review, and subscribe to the Signpost series on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Mark Gibson, and thanks for listening.